not off. Talking with you, this is Howard Hughes. Yes, we're back at Saturday Morning, BBC Radio Berkshire. Howard Hughes here. Time for hot technology news with the coolest man in tech, Fevzi Turkup, the gadget detective. How'd you like the intro then, Fevzi?
Morning, perfect.
I'm glad you liked it. You know, we worked so hard to craft these things. Okay, lots to get into this morning. Starting with the iPhone, is 10 years old?
Yeah, it turned 10 years old on last Thursday, and you know, Steve Jobs held it aloft and announced that the world would change, and he was right, actually. It's quite incredible. So June 29th, 2007, 10 years ago. And I was just thinking about, you know, how it had changed. I mean, obviously, a lot's changed with the iPhone itself. The first one had a 3.5-inch screen. Now you get an iPhone 7 Plus with a 5.5-inch screen, and soon even bigger than that with edge-to-edge display later this year. So incredible. And there was no proper app store at the time. I mean, there was none of that ecosystem that's made the iPhone the success it is. But I was also thinking about, you know, what it's done to the rest of the world, because yes, it sort of killed off its competitor smartphones. So, you know, Nokia literally died to death. You know, Microsoft Windows Mobile went away, and they're still trying to find a version of that worked. And one of the reasons why it did all that, it wasn't because it was the first touchscreen or the first one to, you know, run apps or play music. It was largely because the interface, the way it worked and looked on the screen, it was designed to be prodded with the finger. You didn't have to have a tiny little stylus. Everything was designed to work on a mobile touch interface. They weren't porting it from, you know, oh, this is what we do on our desktop, and now let's make it work on a tiny little screen with a tiny little stylus. So it not only killed off many other phones, but it killed off lots of other gadgets which are not phones. I mean,
well, it did. I mean, look, if I think back 10 years, I was very much attached to my netbook. I took it everywhere. Now I don't have a netbook. I just have a phone, and I have a backup phone in case that fails.
No, absolutely. So yeah, netbooks, e-book readers, you know, they still exist, but they're kind of niche for people who want a particular experience. Point-and-shoot cameras. I mean, almost any camera under £100 has gone away.
Yeah, true. I've got a 12-megapixel Sony camera. It takes lovely pictures, and I cannot be bothered most of the time to take it out with me. Yeah. And I would say all of the photographs that I've taken in the last 2 years have been taken on my phone. I just don't bother with a camera. Mm.
So I have a separate camera, as you can imagine. I mean, it is a pocket camera, but it's probably the best pocket camera that you can buy.
Nothing less, Fevzi.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a Sony RX100. You can look it up, but you really, if you're going to have a camera, it really needs to be a lot better than these sort of entry-level cameras that people used to carry. Otherwise, there isn't really much point. You know, with the RX100, you get, you know, all the extra quality and control that you don't get.
True but enough. Even, so phones have then, done away with even the so very best cameras.
Point-and-shoot cameras, dedicated dashboard GPS units have become a much smaller market now because people are increasingly using their phones for that. When did you last see anyone using a camcorder?
Yeah. I can't remember, really.
Exactly.
In a movie, I think.
Do you remember PDAs, personal digital assistants? They kind of got usurped.
Yes, and I remember I was bought one of these things in 2002. I've still got it in the box. It was a present. Yeah. Everybody was using them. I can't remember what this thing was called, but they were all the rage at one point, and they were expensive. But they allowed you to download a little bit of the internet and take it on the train with you. Like, what was that thing called?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the ones I used to use were from a company called Scion. So PDAs, and of course, they did for their own iPod as well, because when Steve Jobs held it aloft, he said, you know, it does three things, and one of those three things was an iPod.
So the one law of robotics, this looks like something that I would see posted as a funny, quirky little post on Facebook. What is this, the one law of robotics?
Okay, so one step backwards. When we're thinking about creating artificially intelligent robots and sentient beings, we Isaac Asimov famously wrote the three laws of robotics that were designed to keep us safe, like a robot may not injure a human being, or through an action allow a human being to come to harm. Unfortunately, a robot could interpret that as human beings are inherently at risk, therefore we should anesthetize all of them and keep them in stasis. So the challenge is, how do you create a rule for artificial intelligence so that it doesn't do us harm by bad wording or interesting interpretation of the rule. And the new rule that they've come up with, one single rule to do away with all other rules: humans must flourish. And I like that.
Well,
I'm not sure
silly 5 years ago, but now we have to make that clear, don't we? Because artificial intelligence and robotics.
Yeah.
There's a guy called Kevin Warwick, who I've interviewed many times, is allied
Captain
with Reading
Cyborg.
University, Captain Cyborg. I mean, yeah. He is the man who will tell you all about how this stuff is moving ahead at a pace. We've even had this week one of the supermarkets, I think it is, testing out in one area of London driverless cars making deliveries.
Yeah.
So
pods.
You know, this is pods making deliveries. So this is the future of all of this, and I think we have to just assert ourselves. So good point. Okay, let's get to the gadget of the week very finally in our dying seconds here, which is, well, it's a satellite receiver.
Yeah, it's a satellite receiver. It's from a company called Humax, and the model is HB, as in the pencil, 1100S. And it's a small little box that if you've in the past, for example, been a Sky customer and the Sky dish is still up but you don't want to pay for the subscription, you can plug one of these things in, or and it gives you similar content to Freeview, but a lot of areas can't pick up Freeview, or it doesn't pick up well, or it gets interfered with by 4G signals, which is a real pain. So this box will receive and give you about 200 channels, free satellite TV channels, including all, you know, BBC, but it also connects to the internet, so you get access to on-demand services like BBC iPlayer, ITV Hub, all of that sort of thing, and things like YouTube as well. The reason why I've chosen this one, I think the really nice thing about it is that it has a really nice interface. It's actually easy to use. The electronic program guide is a delight to use, and not only does it allow you to look forward 8 days, but you can look back 7 days and watch programs that you might have missed as well. Plus, you can plug in a hard drive into it, a USB hard drive that you might have spare even, and then you can do things like record your own programs, pause, play, rewind, all those sorts of functions. And the reason why I like the fact, some people don't like the fact it's external, the reason I like the fact it's external is that you can just plug in a different one when you want to. Play music, your own video clips, and record off the satellite receiver as
it's
well.
It's a very, very neat looking box, I have to say. And
£99, 4.5 stars.
I was just about to say that. Yeah, you know, £99, look what you get for your 100 quid these days. Fevzy, if people want to shoot the breeze, ask you a tech question, where do they go?
Come and say hello at Gadget Detective on Twitter.
Fevzy Turkup, the Gadget Detective, returns here at BBC Radio Voucher in 7 days from now.